A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with Obstructive View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs. We're just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and talking baseball, including the 2016 World Series champion Cubs, who I'm very glad actually happened because it makes this year and the last few years a little more palatable, or at least tolerable. It's definitely not palatable. With me today is Adam. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right. Just loving every minute of baseball, win or lose.
Yeah, we really prefer that they start winning, though. But yeah, we can definitely talk about that. So today, I think we're going to try to switch it up. So before we really piss you off, let's piss you off a little bit by talking about some rules. we might talk about the Cubs as well, because this is, of course, a Cubs podcast, just trying to figure out who's to blame. Why aren't they doing well? What's going on with the roster? Did someone forget the live chicken? And what we can do to reverse this trend of Cubs not being fun and not winning. How's that for a plan, sir?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
Well, in the spirit of butting heads, I don't like that plan at all.
Well.
But I'll go with it.
That's fair.
As the spring gave away to summer, past the ivy-colored dreams, toward the days that kept us yearning for tomorrow.
Okay, so I know this was precipitated by two very controversial plays over the past week. One, I'm pretty sure, was a White Sox game. And the other, I completely forgot who the teams were, but essentially it was the Yankees. Yankees. Yeah. So in the first play, White Sox, I think it was Andrew Vaughn trying to make it back to second base, went into the path of, now I remember, it was Gunnar Henderson, right? He was trying to get to the infield pop out. So I think our contention is that, hey, if the infield fly rule automatically makes the batter out, why are we penalizing the runner? And the issue there is the interference rule as currently written. Like, there is no leeway with interference, right? Like, if you interfere with a fielder's ability to just reasonably get to the ball, if they have to deviate from their path in any way, the runner is out as well. And so the first play,
unless, and this will come into play on the second play, unless you are in contact with a legally occupied base.
Right. So we'll talk about that shortly, but essentially Andrew Vaughn prevented Henderson from getting a straight line towards the infield pop out. And again, the batter is already out. That's the infield fly rule. Batter is automatically out. Runners are protected. If you are protecting the runners, I think this is where your issue is. If you're trying to protect the runners should have the right of way towards their base, right?
Not necessarily. No. So here's where it gets a little complicated. It's partly because on one hand, on the infield fly, the batter is automatically out. It's not a flat out statement that he's definitely out, because they have to wait for the ball to land to determine if it's fair or foul. Infield fly rule applies only to balls that are in fair territory. So if typically the the call by the umpire would be infield fly rule if fair, but the ball in question in the White Sox game was, and in both games, they were basically very close to each other and where they landed.
Right.
So, but still, it, whether the umpire says if fair or not, it still doesn't become official until it has proven to be fair, either by being caught in fair territory or by, you know, being definitively foul. If it lands fair and no one touches it and it comes to rest, the batter is out. If it rolls foul, then the infield fly rule is negated. So because of that, it's really not like that part of it isn't important, except that the rules of baseball try to do two things here. One, they try to make sure that it is enforced for the infield fly rule that the ball has come to a stop in fair territory in order for that infield fly rule to be called. So that, you know, that's understandable to a point, but then as we saw explained in that YouTube video that went around explaining the rule, there's also a special exception to the interference rule, which typically if there's interference by a runner, the runner is ruled out immediately and the play is ruled dead. But because an infield fly rule requires for its enforcement for the ball to come to a stop, to either be caught or to come to a stop in fair territory or to go foul, then because that, or to be touched in fair territory, I should add, because that has to happen, the rules state that interference on an infield fly rule does not create a dead ball. So this is a problem. This is where I see the big problem. And It's the rule is not just to protect the runners, it's to protect the offensive team. So we have a rule on an infield fly rule that is designed to keep the defense from manipulating the rules to get a double or triple play. It creates, because of the way these rules are written, it creates an opportunity for the defense to manipulate the rules to get a double or triple play.
Right.
Basically, if you grew up in Little League, you were probably taught this. And what the question that you asked earlier, that like a runner should be able have the right of way to get to the base that they're supposed to go to, but they don't. The rules of baseball clearly state that the fielder has the right of way. So if I used to play third base,
right,
and my coach always taught me, if there's a runner on second, like, and we were playing Little League, so guys weren't really crushing it, you know, he was like, you position yourself in the baseline or wherever, and the baseline established by where the runner is. So if the runner's taking his lead from second base and I'm playing third and there's a runner on first, I am positioning myself in between the runner and the bag so that he has to go around me. If a ball is hit to me, I'm going to get in between the runner and intentionally get in his way to make it more difficult for him to reach the base, because I have the right of way and I'm going to take advantage of that. And if he runs into me, and I've had guys playing even in softball leagues who are like, oh, you're in my way, I'm going to run you over. And I'm like, bring it on, sir, because you will be out.
Yeah, but that's only if the ball is hit to you. You can only be in that baseline if you have a bona fide attempt to field.
Yes. I have to move. But right, if it's hit to me, I am taking up that spot. So That's on a ground ball where it's pretty obvious for most people who know the rules. Yeah, I have to run around the fielder to get to the base. Where it gets tricky, and it's so funny, in my nearly 50 years of existence on this planet, I have never seen interference on an infield fly, and now I've seen it twice within the span of a week. If I'm a fielder, if they're going to continue to enforce this rule, if I'm a fielder on a pop-up and there is a path that I can take between where I am and where the ball looks like it's going to drop, that allows my path to intersect with the runner's path, I am going to run them down and create contact where they're interfering and I have the right of way. As long as I can establish that I am making a play on the ball, that contact, it will be the runner's responsibility to avoid that contact. And that's where in all the discussions about this play, it's typically we're looking at this one instance. But I prefer to look at it as how can this, what do we want to avoid happening? Like the infield fly rule exists because what we want to avoid happening is the defense to just let a ball drop on the infield and use the indecision that that confusion creates for the runners to give you multiple outs. And so that's what I'm worried about because of this interference call, because of this interference rule, this interference exception, where like, what are the prerequisites for an infield fly rule? Got to be fewer than two outs.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be runners on first and second at least.
Yes, or bases loaded. Yes. So as a clarification, I don't think, like, you know, when I'm saying the runner has a right of way, that's what I think needs to change with respect to the infield fly rule only. I realize that the runner never has a run away when the fielder is attempting to field. The difference is, this is the first two instances of the infield fly rule where the, like, most of the time, the ball's in the air for at least 5 seconds. That's why it's an infield fly. It's like way up there, and you can catch it with ordinary effort. You just camp under it if you're not like an incompetent fielder. This is like two instances in the span of a week where the ball is literally having the fielder and the runner intersect. Like before then, like the very last time I believe this happened was when they implemented this new rule in the first place in like 2014, because the runner actually
pulled. What is this new rule? That's something what is the new rule that was implemented in 2014? Clarify that.
That is the interference rule, because you can't interfere with someone attempting to catch an infield fly.
The interference exception.
The exception to that exception is if you're already touching the base. So that gets us to the Juan Soto situation where, okay, the fly ball is in the air for 5 seconds. Get your butt back to the base. If you are not in an active tag situation, you can run into left field, right field, wherever field. You can run to the mound. You do not have to be staying on the baseline, but you have to get back to that base. The moment he's on that base, if he's touching it, he cannot be called out. The problem is he doesn't contact the base until just after he prevents the fielder from catching the fly ball. And that's why he's out by interference. So what I'm proposing is that on infield fly rules only, because you know the batter is already out and the runners cannot advance unless at their own risk, you either make it a completely dead ball, which I think is something that you already said, or you allow the runners, no matter what, to have the right of way back to their base, because they have to be able to get back to their base to protect the offense.
I understand that to a degree, except that's one thing that I think could also be manipulated. Mm-hmm. That if you're allowed the right of way, if you knew that you could run into a fielder and cause him to drop the ball, well, and if that would not be interference, what you'd have is a situation where I can cause the fielder, or I can prevent the fielder from fielding the ball, and then I don't have to worry about getting back to the base. I could run back to, you know, I could run to the next base because the ball is getting dropped and I can advance at will. So that's why I'm proposing that as soon as an interference call is made, we talk about those prerequisites. There have to be runners on first and second, and there have to be fewer than two outs. As soon as that interference call is made, one of those runners is no longer there, and the infield fly rule is no longer in effect. That's my proposal, that either that there are too many outs, you've made a second out, or the runner on second. You wouldn't expect this to ever happen with a runner on third. Like that would be crazy.
Yeah.
Because a guy on third is in foul territory when he's taking his lead. So there's no reason that should happen if you're a runner on third. But if the runner on second or the runner on first is declared out, it should be a dead ball and the infield fly rule is nullified. And the batter would then be given a hit, as is the case in every other interference call on a batted ball, provided that it's not the third out. And if it's an infield fly rule, it wouldn't be the third out, which would negate the benefit to the defense if they are able to create an interference call. And what
that's, you know, that's the batted ball hitting a runner thing, right? That's a dead ball. And then that guy's out and everybody
right,
else.
But that's
gets a
also,
base, right?
That's a form of interference, but it's also, it's the same application. If you interfere with the fielder, the batter is out, the runner would be out. So that's, and then it's the same implementation of the rule where the batter would be awarded a hit and the batter would be awarded their base. So if the batter is going to reach base anyway, there's no benefit for the defense to intentionally create, to manufacture an interference call. And I don't know that I really didn't think that the play in the White Sox game, there was any intent on the fielder to really initiate that interference.
Yeah, but that's the problem with interference, is that they don't care about intent. Like,
right,
if
but
you interfere, you're out. That's
the rule. As the rules stand now. But as someone who, if I were in position to actually make a rule, being able to intentionally cause interference on the other team, I do care about that. Like that, especially if it's on a play, the infield fly rule, which is designed to prevent such malfeasance from happening.
Right. And right. So there's an umpire judgment in that too, because they can actually, you know, use their judgment to say, yes, that is obstruction and or interference. And you either stay at your base or you get the next base if you're the runner, or you're out if you're the runner and you cause the interference. So there is some discretion in there. It's just a matter of how much discretion do you want the umpires to have, and do you actually trust them to use that discretion wisely?
Yeah.
For the most part, I think, yeah, sure. Especially now that Angel Hernandez is retired, but you know,
it's still like, I can empathize with the ump who called it originally, who, you know, the Major League Baseball, you know, issued a commentary on the call that it shouldn't have been, you know, that interference shouldn't have been called on that original White Sox play. And it's like, I don't even know that they gave much of an explanation other than umpire discretion should be allowed. And it seemed like the umpire in that situation was like, I have no choice but to call this, which
right, that's the way the rule is written.
I can understand. Yeah. And it's nothing against that particular umpire, in my view. It's looking at the game of baseball in general. Anybody looking at that play can see this is stupid. It is stupid that you can be called out for interference and that the infield fly rule can still be in effect. And there'd be two outs on this play on an out that, like, it doesn't make any sense. You can make it. You can say, but yes, if you apply the rules as stated, that's the correct call, and have that be completely according to the law. And I can still tell you, and anybody watching the game can still tell you, it's stupid. It's a stupid law. It's a stupid rule if that's what happens.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you that it is stupid. Like, the batter's already out. Like, obviously, the ball is going to land in fair territory unless the guy just, like, high-lies the ball into foul territory after catching it, which would be very, very stupid on their part, by the way.
Yeah.
But, the batter's out.
I do want to say this. In the second game, in the Yankee game, and I can't remember what team it was anymore. You know, it's too much. I'm too emotional. But the fielder in that instance, I truly believe, was making more of an intentional motion to get in the runner's way than he was to get in the appropriate place to catch that ball, because he could not reach the ball from where he was standing to where the ball was. If there was no runner there, he was still going to have a hard time catching that ball. Yeah. He planted himself right next to the base to make it difficult for Soto to get back. That, I have no doubt in my mind that unless there was some type of weird weather condition that I was unaware of that, you know, wasn't made evident in the replay, he was not going to catch that ball. He was trying to get in the way. And that's the shit I don't want to see. I never want to go to a game where a fielder is trying to instigate an interference call on an infield fly rule. Like, I understand the competitive spirit, whatever. That isn't baseball.
Yeah. You shouldn't be allowed to, like, Herbeck a guy or A-Rod a ball out of somebody's hand. You can't do that.
Yeah, it's just, that's not good. That's not good sports. And, Tango was saying, like, oh, yeah, Soto was being inattentive. Like, no, that's not something you've ever had to pay attention to in the game of baseball. Is this pop-up going to land on the base I need to get back to? And is the shortstop going to try to get in my way to prevent me from getting back to the base that I'm three steps away from? Like, you have to pay attention to a lot of things in the game of baseball. And because he wasn't hyper-focused on the path back to second on a pop-up, no, that's not inattentive. That's stupid to say that you should be attentive to where the pop-up exactly is going to land, because I might no one's ever thought about that ever. Shut up.
Right.
Get over it.
Yeah. So back to where I was saying, like, there was no tag play on Soto, so I think he could have gone around the fielder. The ball was in the air for so long, and he was just slow stepping it back. That's the one thing that I thought he could have done differently. Had he been on the base before he caught it, no problem. But I think I see what you're saying is that, like, no matter what, the guy was trying to position himself between Soto and the base, regardless of how he would have gotten back to the base. So I think you're right. There needs to be a stipulation to prevent that. And I think the good news is, you remember when replay was first, like, expanded to more than just boundary calls and home runs, right? It was also for, you know, did he catch the ball and stuff like that. And then there were a lot of replays that were reversed because it was dropped on the transfer after a catch. So then it became like the NFL catch rule for a little bit. But then MLB, like, within, I wouldn't want to say within a month, had fixed that. So it seems like, I don't want it to happen again, but seeing this twice in a week, it seems like they would be able to release a statement that says, hey, you know, we see that this is happening. This is what we're going to change in order to protect the runner, et cetera, et cetera. And that also there were a lot of little nuances of the home plate collision rule as well. And then they actually, you know, kind of codified it and told everybody, you know, this is where the catcher should set up. And then as soon as he has the ball, all bets are off, things like that. So I feel like this can be solved in very quick order. Maybe not this season, but by next spring, they should have a way to address it in such a way that it would be satisfying to most of us. I'm sure there's going to be like one person out there that's going to complain either that, oh, they changed it, you know, this rule has been here for 150 years, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. Or there's probably going to be something else to complain about, because that's what fans do. They complain, right? And I'm sure we'll complain about other things later, but you do make a good point. You don't want to, I guess you don't want that kind of shenanigans on the playing field. I do like the idea of more hidden ball tricks on the playing field. I haven't seen a good hidden ball trick in a very long time, but that's the only chicanery that I want to see on the field. I don't want to have people obstructing bases, and they already took that out of the base stealing playbook. Like, you can't put your knee in front of the base or anything anymore. And the catcher obviously has to set up a certain way. But if you can prevent people from just like stationing themselves in the baseline without having the ball, even on an infield fly, like, just try to make it make sense. Like, I think the lady in the video that I showed you also concedes that a lot of the rules in baseball don't make sense. But this is one where I think you can have a fairly satisfactory solution to protect the base runner as well as the defense, because they do have to catch the ball, because if they don't, advance at your own risk, right?
Right. I mean, when I play in softball leagues, if I'm on the infield and there's an infield fly and it's called, I never catch that thing. I will let it drop 10 times out of 10 because, like, just to see what chaos ensues. I channel my inner Javi whenever that happens, because it's like, hey, let's see who doesn't know the rules and, you know, let's figure out what happens. So the infield fly rule is the devil. It has to exist. But baseball is funny that way, how there are some times where the rules of baseball are very like, you can't trick people. And other times where it's like, man, I don't know what to tell you. You're on your own. Like, you know, certain instances of trickery, like the balk, like, it's like, don't you dare do anything that could be construed as trying to deceive the runner or the batter or whatever. But, you know, in other ways, it's like, well, if you step like just close enough toward first, Terry Mulholland or, you know, whoever it is, who was Andy Pettit? Yeah. He had that wicked pickoff move that everybody thought was a balk. Like, that, it's just so funny. It's an interesting game, but I will say, I think it gets decidedly less interesting when all those like hidden, like somewhat obscure rules start to become their own game. That's when it just seems a little too gross for me. It's like, come on, like you should never get a bonus on an infield fly. If the ball drops and runners start going everywhere and it winds up being a triple play, like that's part of the chaos. Like, you do have to know the rules, but the petty stuff, you know, getting in the runner's way and creating contact, I don't ever want to see it escalate to that level, because that's something where I always try and think too, like, what about the children? Like, if you're growing up in baseball and you see this is a way you can get outs, I don't want my kids playing with that kid who's like gonna go like, just like, oh, that's interference, two outs, infield fly rule, innings over. Like, I hope someone smacks that kid.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they'll fix it. Something that I hope that they fix as well is our very own Chicago Cubs. Oh, yes. Let's do a reset. As of today, after losing yet another series, this time to the Reds, they are 7.5 back of the Milwaukee Brewers. I don't know if the Cardinals have won or have lost against the Phillies yet. I haven't checked, but they are in a virtual tie with St. Louis for second place. If St. Louis wins, they will now be in third, and they are 27 and 29 is St. Louis, 29 and 31 is Chicago. There are probably a couple of games that they still have to make up. One is against said St. Louis Cardinals, and then
Cardinals game 1-10.
They did?
Yeah.
Those jerks. Okay. Well, anyway, now the Cubs are in third place. So they have minus 12 run differential. And I think that pretty much squares with their Pythag at this point. Like, they are two games under 500, which is not terrible, actually, because they are within half a game of that final wild card spot that was shared between them and the Giants and the Cardinals. So It's not the end of the world. There is an off day tomorrow as of this recording before they face the White Sox. And I guess I would say that if they can't beat the White Sox, then the season is probably over. But I only say that partially facetiously because there are over 100 games left. It's like there's time, but they shouldn't use How that as an excuse.
Yeah.
Like a third of the season is over. Do something. So now it's a matter of if it were me and I were, you know, the person in the room with Jed Hoyer, I think they're not going to punt the season. They are trying to look at this as something to fix. They are looking at the roster itself as made up of veterans and players who have shown a track record of doing great things on offense. They are defensively capable. And obviously the pitching is doing well unless you get into the bullpen, in which case we have an adventure. But the starting pitching is actually doing quite well. So now it's just a matter of trying to figure it, this stuff out, because this is an absolute mystery. This is a I don't even know what's going on. Like, the offense just decided to shut down. And you hope that Saturday's game against the Reds, they broke out. Nope, today completely shut down again. The cool thing is they're continuing to get guys on base. They're hitting the ball hard, but a lot of those balls are hit at a launch angle that will turn them to warning track and flyouts. And a lot of those balls are still getting hit right at people. And I think you and I talked about this, like the Morel ball that should have gotten past Candelario instead became a double play and then end the inning. And that's just like one of those things that really irks you. But at the same time, you're like, is there something they could be doing different? And really, what can they be doing different? They're hitting the crap out of the ball, and it's just finding a glove. I can't explain it.
You know, it's funny that you bring up that double play from Morel. Earlier and in past years, I've always said this team is an Ian Happ team. They're very Ian Happ. They're not, you know, fantastic, but like, nothing that you're afraid of, but still like pesky and like get on base, and they still have flashes of power, and you know, before you know it, they sneak up on you, and like sneaky good defense. You know, it's an Ian Happ team. No great big stars, but not that bad. And about a month into the season, I felt like they stopped being an Ian Happ team and they started being a Mike Tauchman team. Mm-hmm. You know, like generally working long at bats, making good contact, hitting the ball the other way, playing good defense, just being tenacious, never giving up. It's like, you know, whatever the game equivalent of being down 0-2 and just working the at bat until something good happens. You know, just staying alive long enough to see a pitch you can hit. Like, they became a very Mike Tauchman team. And now I feel like they are a very Christopher Morel team. Like, they're hitting the ball hard. They have like a decent eye at the plate, not chasing a lot, and striking out, but not striking out a ton. Like, his strikeout rate, I haven't looked at it lately, but it's still better than it was last year, like a marked improvement, you know, a much better chase rate, and hitting the ball hard with regularity, working long at bats, and having nothing to show for it whatsoever. You know, like, now they feel like a Christopher Morel team. Doing yeah. all the right things, and it just not paying off. And so to me, it's about how do they respond to what they've gone through up until now. Do they yeah. start to pick up bad, like, you know, reaction responses where they start to like try too hard, or they start pulling off the ball, or do they start to go the other way with, you know, do they start to take the Bellinger approach with two strikes and just serve one over the infield? You know, like, what are they going to do to ride out the variance
right.
that they're experiencing? And so yeah. it'll be interesting to see, but it's frustrating, but yeah, I still haven't given up.
You do make a good point about the serving it right over the infield, because there are a lot of hits from today where I think Nico did exactly that. Like, contact is important. Contact is how, like, the Reds and the Brewers got through all the bullshit that eventually led to runs. But there might be something to be said for just pulling back, not trying to hit the piss out of the ball, but just make contact and help it find grass. And I think a lot of very smart people, much smarter than I am in terms of baseball, have suggested that, no, you can't really control spray all that well, but you can try. And making contact is half the equation. If you can make contact, like a Bellinger B swing, maybe good things will happen, and sometimes good things do. It's just that not enough of those good things are happening to the Cubs, and you wonder how much of that is skill and how much is luck. And I think the skill part is just hitting the crap out of the ball, squaring it up. But the luck part is, you know, some of these defenders are really good. Some of these defenders, like especially the Milwaukee outfielders, are super fast. They will track down these balls if you don't hit it out of the park or into a gap. So, and the fact that they're positioned so well, where I'm hitting the crap out of this ball, but look, there's a second baseman standing right there staring in on a line. How do you control against that? You have to spray it somewhere else, but how do you make them spray it somewhere else? I have no idea. That's completely out of their control. So I guess at this point, you just kind of trust the process, right? And hope that it all works out in the end.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what you have to do. It's sort of like if you're Nick Madrigal and you're asking, what did I do, you know, to get myself optioned to Iowa? Like, I think a lot of his process was fine. It just came down to, man, like, if you can't play with the big boys at third base, you know, if you aren't fast enough to get to score from first on a double into the corner of the Northwestern campus, like, then you're just not good enough. But I don't know that they're looking at the roster and saying these guys aren't good enough. I think it's just like, this is some really crappy luck. Like, and it's not just the hitters. It's also like, yeah, Kyle Hendricks has not been the Kyle Hendricks we know and love, and neither was Adbert. But it also, didn't it feel like today, like every single bad pitch they had has found the bleachers? Like, there's just, you know, sometimes guys have to pop one up behind them, you know, like to foul it straight back and just miss the easy pitch. Like, it just seems like, man, every 99 mile an hour exit velocity, 27 degree hit for other teams just seems to find the basket. You know, it's like you can be the very best team in baseball and play the very worst team in baseball and still get swept. Like, it happens, and you don't have to play like crap for it to happen. One thing that I've just grown really tired of, and I shouldn't even be on Twitter to begin with, but seeing the general typical Cub fan response to, like, get rid of Morel, or this is inexcusable. Yeah. These guys are terrible. Absolutely unforgivable performance. It's like, yeah, I mean, there are a couple dumb mistakes here and there, but for the most part, I'm looking at what I'm seeing on the field and I don't like the results, but I'm not seeing anything that is terrible. You know, it's frustrating, but that's the game. That's how it works. The best team doesn't always win, and the best performance doesn't always pay off. And sometimes you break your bat and you get a double down the line. And sometimes you crush the ball and you hit into a double play. And that's just the game. This is what we signed up for. It's not basketball. You can't just be better and always beat the other team.
Right. Yeah, there's so much chaos baked into baseball. And I think the one thing that I will say is I do think they're going to buy, whether the Cubs are above 500 or not. They did it last year. Like, they, for whatever reason, you know, they were under 500, and then they just decided, you know what, this team can do something. We're just going to buy. And they got, you know, Kwas and Candelario in trade. And they probably could have gotten, like, Sam Moll, who went to the Reds, but there was some, like, weird trade stuff happening back there. But they did buy. And this, that team is objectively worse than this team. This team has a lot of the same characters with more experience and some additions, right? And you obviously have a more respected manager. Now, we can ask ourselves whether or not he really has enough magic, but honestly, he's put the right guys on the field that are available to him, and he's put the right pitchers into the game at the points that you would expect them to be in the game. And sometimes they just don't execute. That's not the manager's fault. I don't think, anyway. So there's only so much he can do if the players on the field don't do what they're supposed to do. And I think that's, you know, we've seen rock bottom. I hope I didn't just curse us, like, perpetually, but I hope this is rock bottom, because these guys should be better. And one thing that I was hoping
let me interrupt you real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
We're about to play two games against the Chicago White Sox, the very worst team in baseball in a long time. If there is a rock bottom, it would be the Cubs winding up 29-33 later on this week.
Yeah, we don't want that.
That would be rock bottom.
Well, thanks for pre-cursing us, man.
I'm just gonna, like, just meet that, head that jinx off at the pass, and just say but still, it's the last little stretch has been very rock bottom-ish.
Yeah, it hasn't been fun, and I think a lot of it has to do with just not holding base runners, because you could see extra runs being scored and manufactured because people are allowed to take the extra base, and yet somehow the Cubs aren't always taking their extra base. Now, I've seen anecdotally that they have, and full disclosure, I haven't actually watched a Cubs game in, like, over a week and a half. Like, it's just been very, very difficult to follow a team that I just, like, do I tune in? Am I really that superstitious that if I think I tune in, I will curse them even more perpetually than they already are? But it just hasn't been fun to watch before I stopped watching. And now I'm just like, well, I guess I should start watching, like, you know, when they actually finally win a series. But yeah, I just honestly haven't. And I've just been following on game day and looking at pitch tracker and, you know, watching the play by play and just wondering how things happened. And some of them you can kind of imagine what happened right away. And some of them you're just like, wait, how did that happen? But yeah, it's really rough to just, I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm a pretty strong Cubs fan, and I do am on the record as saying that 2016 helped a lot with just me getting more mellow. But yeah, at some point you want them to win again, and it's just so hard, man. It's hard to be a Cubs fan, especially when you're running, like, a Cubs blog, and you have to run a page, and then people are, like, doing the things that you're seeing on Twitter, and just, like, I have no desire to fuel that anymore. I have other things to deal with, and I have an actual job, so I'm gonna focus on that. And if the Cubs do well, so be it. But that's kind of a them problem, and I think if we put ourselves in their shoes, one problem has already been solved. You have, like, a light hitting third baseman who wasn't really defending all that well or running all that well. Nick Madrigal's down in Iowa. Hopefully he finds a groove, because the last time he found a groove in Iowa, he came back and was actually very useful. So I think that's one thing that could help him, and also Miles Mastroboni, when they do come back up, because at some point the Cubs will probably need them again. The other is trying to figure out the coaching situation. Like, is there something wrong with the way they're preparing themselves, or just in game, they're not putting themselves in the right positions. And so all these, like, you know, ground balls are sneaking through, et cetera, or, you know, you're not teaching your pitchers to hold runners. And there was a pickoff today in the game. I think Drew Smyly picked. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Drew Smyly and Ben Brown, I think, got one too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'll have to check the box score, but I'll take your word for it, because I think you watched the game and I did not. But yeah, like, I feel like they're addressing some of these things piecemeal, and hopefully it'll be like the Major League movie when it all finally just starts to come together again, and then we'll look back on this and just laugh.
Yeah, there's two things going on. One is the question of, are they really going to make a run for it this year to actually try and make a meaningful run at getting in the postseason and being a team that has what it takes to win a series or two in the postseason? That's one thing. And The other thing is, what are they going to do right now to break out of this funk? I hear a lot of people like this question of, like, are they going to make moves to turn this team around? And, like, I don't know what sport people have been following where, like, in May and June, you start, like, rebuilding a team and, like, digging it out of the ashes by, like, adding, you know, these amazing new pieces to the puzzle. Like, I don't think that really happens very much. Like, it normally, yeah, you can make a trade at any time, but typically it's going to happen around the trade deadline. And I think one thing that we're seeing is that there's nobody out there who's really going to be the answer. You know, like, this hasn't been a year when the guys that you're expecting to deliver for you, you can just say, yeah, they're going to deliver. Like, this has been the year where we've been seeing, yeah, baseball isn't like that. Like, yeah, obviously there are good players that you can add, but no one who's going to, like, take a team that you just can't figure out and turn them into, like, a guaranteed winner. Like, they have to get, fine tune some things, but just keep playing, just keep like having good attitudes, doing the work, staying out of their heads, and continue. Like, normally when you've seen the Cubs really struggle, where it felt like every single hitter was trying to hit a grand slam to lead off an inning. You know, it just, like, and when runners got on, it was doubly so. Like, I am going to homer here. And it was strikeout, 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 double play, double play. Like, just that's why I compared, like, this past bad stretch. It felt very much like those games against the Diamondbacks last year, where it didn't matter how well you hit the ball, someone was going to catch it. You know, it didn't matter how well you held a runner on, he was going to steal. And it didn't matter how good of a jump you got, the catcher was going to throw you out. Just like, you know, their best efforts, it just never was enough. And I just think you go through stretches like that sometimes. So I think the key is really how well that council can keep them within themselves, keep them positive, keep frustration from being something that carries over from one day to the next and one series to the next, and just keep playing good baseball. That it won't always result in a win, but if you keep doing that, with this team and with this talent, like, it's funny how you can frame the season, right? Like, if I had told you that Justin Steele, Jameson Taillon, Merriweather, Adbert, Hendricks, Smyly, and who else in the pitching staff has gone on the IL at some point or another. Like, yeah. All these guys.
Yeah. Almonte is on the IL. Merriweather's on the IL.
Like,
And
Suzuki is going to be on the IL for some time. Bellinger's going to miss some time. Swanson's going to go on the IL. Horner isn't going to go on the IL, but he will miss a week. And like,
that was crazy.
but
they did it.
60 games into the year, they're going to be two games under 500. I would have been like, hey, okay, you know, that's sucks, but I guess that's fine. But if you framed it, if I told you that Shota is going to be like a dark horse candidate for Cy Young and lead the majors in ERA, you know, close to up to this point, and Assad is going to be, you know, similar to the same boat, and you know, all the different like production areas where the Cubs have been good, and if you said, and they're still going to be two games of 500, it'd be like, what? Like, come on. So it's there have been times where the Cubs were very fortunate to be winning as much as they were, and I think we all got a little over our skis in thinking, okay, this team is a lot better than I thought they were. When, you know, maybe some of the, like, it didn't seem like they were getting super lucky, but somehow they were winning, you know. The bullpen was, I don't think we've ever been through a big winning stretch where the bullpen was carrying us. You know, the bullpen has always been like this nagging little gremlin in the back of the plane. So, it's there have been times where we were fortunate to be winning, and I think we've gone through times where we're really unlucky to be losing so much. But all in all, I still like the components that have brought us here, and I don't see any reason to panic. I haven't agreed with every move Council has made, but I don't need to. It's like, if I agreed with everything he's done, I've always thought if a manager gets paid a lot of money to make the same decisions I would make, like, that's problematic to me. like if it's just like, oh, do what the consensus says, and that's all there was to managing, then it wouldn't be worth paying a guy very much money to do. So I think this is where he's going to earn his money, is not in the in-game moves. It's going to be how well he keeps this team going in the right mental direction. As all these frustrations have continued to play out, and the losing streaks haven't gotten really long, but they've, you know, we've hit some bad ones, and you know, you never know when that luck, that momentum is going to change and become something else. So you can't ask for a better opportunity than to be playing the White Sox. That's all I can say.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard with baseball to know when somebody's really on a heater or if it's a fluke. And we just won't know until the end of the season. I don't think anybody's getting fired, but they're going to do something. I'm pretty sure they'll try to do something to jumpstart the team. And hopefully whatever they decide works, because I'm fresh out of ideas, man. Like, the players that we have, they're supposed to be good, and they have been good. They just need to be good again. And I think that'll happen pretty soon. So hopefully we didn't just curse them. Like, but yeah, we will definitely see. I think.
Be a little better.
It definitely play better. You know, you can't win unless you score, and you can't win unless you score more than the other team. So do more of that. It just, whatever they decide to do, it just needs to work. That's all I care about.
Yeah. If I'm the manager, I'm not even saying play better. I'm just going to say, keep playing as well as you can, and trust that it's going to get better. That's like, you don't have to suddenly become a better player. Keep being the player that you are. Just don't get worse. Don't let this turn you into a worse player, a dumber player, a more desperate player. Because that's when it really starts to suck. You know?
Yeah, I think there was like the descending of Madrigal in that one game was probably a desperation move. Because you're just like, well, he's Madrigal. He's got short, stumpy legs. What are you doing? But you realize, they haven't been stringing together hits, so maybe why not just give it a try, and maybe they'll throw it into the stands, and then we'll score an extra run. I don't know. But, it's tough. Sometimes
it was like when Lightning McQueen in that opening race in Cars, it's like coming down the home stretch, and it's like, oh yeah, he's so far ahead of everybody. He's got to be able to make it. It was just like, and just, yeah, couldn't get there in time.
Yeah, it wasn't even a photo finish for him. I think he was out by like really 7 feet. He was out by more than one Madrigal.
And he kind of tagged him in a way that made him look like a prop. You know, like just a crash test dummy came sailing toward him, and he just kind of like shoved him away. Like, oh, here's this limp rag that came out of nowhere. I didn't see it live. So going back and watching the low light was, oh man, I was so glad I missed it. I would have been so pissed in the moment.
Yeah. The condensed game for Saturday night's / Sunday morning's game that they made them wait like 3 hours to play because of the rain, and then they just kept playing while it was raining. That was a really stupid game, but at least they won. And I did watch that. That was a lot of fun. Like, you kind of hope defense shores up. Saya starts thinking about using two hands to catch. But, as long as he catches the ball, I don't care. But when he drops it, it's like, it's just very, very sad. I think he's perfectly fine. And, like, he also had the Christopher Morel disease where he's, like, hitting the crap out of the ball, and it just kept dying at the track or finding gloves, and it's extremely irritating. But
Saya's an interesting case to me because he hurt his oblique, right?
Yeah.
Like, I really hope that it's not like he's at 90% and that's as good as it's gonna get, and it's like maybe he's losing like 5% on his exit velocity, and that's the difference between him having 15 home runs and him having, 250 fly balls to the warning track that get tracked down. That's kind of what I'm worried about, is with all the injuries that have happened, are we just kind of piecing together a bunch of guys who are like fairly healthy?
Yeah, I think he's healthy though, because he just hit one on the Waveland in that game. So I don't think he's hurt at all. I think he's perfectly fine. It's just, it's an execution and or a bad luck thing. Like, I feel like they're just getting under the ball a lot of the time.
I hope so.
Like, when you see those pop-ups, like, they're getting hit really, really hard, but they're getting hit straight up in the air. They're like 40-degree angles. They're not going to get out of the park. Man, so,
Bellinger is in that realm, isn't he, where it's like he's hitting balls like crushing them, but
yeah,
it just seems like they must be just a degree or two too steep, and they're just getting lost in the elevator shaft and coming back down just a little bit shy.
Yeah, and I know it's hard to do a line drive swing as well, because if you miss, it's going to the ground, and then you got that problem too. So I don't know, man. I think I just generally agree with you. Just keep doing what you're doing, and it'll turn around, especially against this June schedule, which I think is mostly what you would term, quote, bad teams. But as long as they don't take them for granted, because every team that they're playing is still a major league team, right?
Yeah. And you know what I want to do is, in this series against the White Sox, I really want to track down the White Sox broadcast and listen to their new dunce announcer call this game and see how he approaches this rivalry. Because man, he's so dumb. But it's entertaining dumb to me. It's like,
so it's not like Hawk dumb.
It's like it, but like if Hawk had never played baseball,
I got
and you. Had only kind of heard it. So it's like he brings Hawk energy, but with a very limited understanding of the game. But it's like a bad wrestling announcer.
Yeah. So they really downgraded from Benetti then.
Yeah. Oh, it's he is the complete anti Benetti. And it's kind of like he's Steve Stone, his whole shtick, his entire broadcasting career, and especially coming up with Harry Carey, was for all you youngsters out there, here's what you need to understand about this play. You know, he would adopt the character of someone explaining to kids how to play the game of baseball. And, you know, it was really effective. Like, that's what I grew up on. Right. But now it's to all you youngsters next to me in the booth. This is how the infield flying rule works. It's kind of entertaining. There was a line where Shiffen said in their series against the Brewers, man, doesn't it seem like throughout this year, like we are just running into teams at the wrong time when they're hitting full stride. And Steve Stone is like, oh, there have been a lot of problems, but that certainly is one of them. It's like, yeah, you also suck, dude. So I kind of think the series will be fun to watch from that angle, you know, to just see how he reacts when the Cubs pour it on and win each game by 30 runs. Please, baseball, Jesus, make it happen.
Yeah, the one sad thing is, like, I know I'll be getting the radio for as long as Pat Hughes is still around. But when I go back to Chicago, they don't have Cubs or White Sox games over the air anymore unless they're on Fox. So, and I've been using Jeff's MLB.TV, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And I will be blacked out in Chicago. So it'll be interesting. Like, I don't know if I want to get Marquee because I've listened to their broadcast and I have issues with them, so I might just listen to the radio and then watch the games afterwards, or find your local neighborhood bar and see it every now and then. But
it's always a possibility. Find a neighbor who likes to watch the games and hang out outside of their front window. Or you can always do the parade of free trial offers.
Oh, yeah.
All those providers who do so.
Yeah, we did that.
Take advantage of.
Yeah. So if I ever have to switch my phone plan, I might just get T-Mobile so I could get the free MLB.TV. But I think my wife told me that we actually, in the apartment that we're going into, we should get free cable with the package that we have. So maybe that includes Marquee. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then I can be as annoyed with the broadcasters as you all are.
Yeah. And I have to say one other broadcasting note, and two, in fact, I'm going to give two pro Cardinal observations. One, what? I really like the Cardinal, the throwback Cardinal powder blue road jerseys. Those bring back fond memories of a team that I hate, but still, you know, it's something. And the other is that Adam Wainwright in the booth with Adam Amin in the Fox broadcast, especially in a game that didn't involve the Cardinals, I really like what he brings to the table. Like, he obviously has a thorough understanding of how to attack hitters. And so it's very interesting to hear someone knowledgeable and someone not exactly Cub friendly who dissects the Cubs hitters in that way of here's how you get this guy out, or like, you know, this is a pitch, like he got it way too close to the zone where Talkman's really able to hit it, or that was in Suzuki's sweet spot, just not where you want to locate it, or he got this away from where Horner is normally able to hit it, but he went the other way and he really did a good job of handling that pitch. Like he obviously he knows his stuff. And so I really felt like he was bringing a fresh perspective to how he breaks down in at bat and how a pitcher would approach these specific hitters. And that to me is very interesting. Like it wasn't just the cookie cutter, well, you got to figure out a way to get this guy, you know, there's still some of that. Like, this is a big out, you know, it's a, like, this is an important out, to get, keep it at four runs, keep this game within reach where you could tie with one swing. It's bad. Don't let it get worse because it's still, you know, it's still a game at this point. And it just, it made it very, very entertaining. It's kind of nice to have someone who brings a fresh perspective and who isn't just obviously rooting for your team. So and I think they kind of thought that it balances out because you have Adam Amin, who is a Chicago friendly guy. So you know, that's it is what it is. But yeah, I enjoyed the broadcast. I really enjoyed that broadcast. Maybe I'll get sick of him, you know, sooner rather than later. But for now, I've been impressed with how he handles the game.
Yeah, I'm glad it worked out for him, because I know his last season, you know, he obviously knew how to attack hitters. And obviously Kyle Hendricks is a smart guy. He knows how to do it. They just can't do it anymore physically, and which is why they're getting shelled. And that kind of sucks. Talk about
good
Kyle.
Outing though for Hendricks today.
Yeah, he saved the bullpen, and I think we'll talk about him next time because they're getting close to a certain date for Mr. Hendricks that they definitely need to get to before anything happens. But yeah, thank you again for hanging out with me. I think the next time we talk, I'll talk to you about this and Jeff and everybody, but I think we might try a Wednesday date because that is the day before our moving cube arrives and I gotta pack all this stuff away. So the next time after that, I will actually be in Chicago, and that's basically where we belong.
All so right.
I'm pretty happy to do that.
Party at Ken's house.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, drive into the city, man. we probably cannot afford a house in the near future because the world has gone to hell, and so has inflation. So we'll see if that ever comes to fruition. I might need.
If it has four walls, I'm calling it a house.
Fair. Yeah, but I gotta hit up my rich uncles and see what happens.
All right.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks again. And you can find us at obstructiveview.net. Our theme song is by Rich Deanna. And our final out call was pulled by Randall Sanders. And yeah, let's see what happens after this off day, guys. Go Cubs.
Woo-hoo. It was more than just a game.